From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's Friday here in Cape Town. Well, it's Friday everywhere. Actually, is it? Is it still Friday in New Zealand? I don't know. No, Alex is saying it's not Friday in New Zealand. Okay, so it's Friday and Saturday. nice weather here at the bottom tip of the African continent. What's the temperature? Let me have a look quickly. 24 degrees Celsius. It's been overcast for most of the day. Oh, Alex says it's it's Saturday in Australia. No, not all of Australia, surely. Just on the East Coast, hey. Is it Saturday also on the West Coast? I've got no idea. Australia's a pretty big place. How many time zones have you got in Australia, Alex? Two. Okay, two time zones. Man, I tell you, time zones and daylight savings confuse the hell out of me. Something I've never been able to wrap my head around. I know why they exist and they serve a purpose. It's just always something that confuses me, particularly the last few days in which half of the world has been changing its clocks. As I've said before, here on the African continent, we are generally too simple-minded to worry about such first world issues like, you know, changing your clock. You know, I just have to wake up earlier or wake up later, depending on when the sun is shining. So for example, it's starting to get darker. Well, let me rephrase it. It's starting to get lighter at a later stage in the morning now because, you know, global cooling is on its way. And, you know, the day just continues as per normal. I don't change my clock. I don't know what it's like to change the clock and then readjust my entire schedule around that. But I suppose it's what you are used to. I do prefer a slightly simpler life. I guess that's one of the reasons why I do enjoy living on the African continent with all its chaos. It's certainly very chaotic out the side of the world, but it also is beautiful. It has its own silver lining. And if it didn't, I wouldn't be here. So there is that. It's duality. It's a double-edged sword. Anyway, I forgot to give you my email address, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Send me an email. Holly says it's definitely Friday where she is. I can't remember where you are, Holly. I remember you've been in the chat before. I don't know if you're in the US or the UK. I don't know. I can't remember. But I'm glad it's still Friday where you are. Okay. I think it is time to chat to John O'Sullivan. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.
Catch the news on the go.
I listen on the way to work.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
John O'Sullivan, is it still Friday where you are?
Oh, very much so, Jeremy. It's still Friday. And the good news is our clocks go forward this weekend. You know, it's all a bit of a mystery, isn't it? I mean, to me, I dread it when they go back in the winter because that's the start of winter and I hate that. But when it goes forward next week, this weekend, I'm loving it because we have a very, because we're so far north in the UK, we get amazing summer times. I mean, it can be as light, very light up to about 10 o'clock at night in about July. So it's one of those things, you know, you love it or hate it. I hate the winter, but I love the summer, Jeremy. Down there in South Africa, do you get the same kind of thing? Do you get the light evenings in the summer?
You know, it's so interesting. This daylight savings thing always it fascinates me because I always thought that Cape Town, which is the very bottom tip of the African continent, I always thought that we are quite far south. But it doesn't appear to be when I hear you talking about how late the sun is shining, 10, 11 at night. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's quite normal for people in the UK in the summertime to be out in the sunshine, literally sunbathing 9 or 10 o'clock at night. I'm talking about, you know, that'll be like end of June. I mean, that's the peak time, end of June. 21st of June is, the winter summer solstice. But then again, conversely, in the winter time, Jeremy, it's dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, okay. All right. So I think to answer your question, down here, it's probably a lot more Mediterranean, if that makes sense. So I think in the peak of summer here in Cape Town, I think 9 o'clock at an absolute push is when it's going to be, you know, a little bit of light. But I think after that, it goes pretty dark. And I think in winter, to be fair, about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, then it's dark. So we don't really have these extreme sort of light dark moments down here.
Yeah, it's a good thing, really. I mean, I as I told you before, Jeremy, I was married to an American. I lived in New York for quite a while, and you know, it's we spent time in Florida. Loved going to Orlando, and we would be there in the middle of winter, and you could guarantee you could set your watch by the top by the sunrise and sunset. You'd need to be around about 6 o'clock every day, 6 in the morning sunrise, 6 in the evening sunset. It's you know, it's predictable. Yeah, it's one of those things. As I said, I love the summertime here, Jeremy. I hate the winters. You know what I want to do? I want to get down to TNT Radio on the Gold Coast every winter, UK winters, and be down there with Alex in the studio. Alex looks very chilled out there in the studio. Yeah, I mean, we can do that, can't we? I suppose that's TNT International, boys. We can go where we want, can't we? Especially you rich cartoonists in South Africa.
Yeah, I like the way you say rich. I'm rich in Zimbabwean dollars.
Yeah, you said that. You talk, Monopoly money.
Listen, you talk about Alex being chilled. I don't think I've ever met anybody as chilled as Alex. I
know. They don't use an office chair for him. They use a camp bed, don't they?
I am so jealous. You know, talking about daylight savings and nighttime, something that didn't really occur to me until, well, just a couple minutes ago is in summer, where you are, are your night times very short? Do they last more than 6-7 hours? Dark night times, I mean.
Yeah, I tell you what I used to do when I was a young lad, you know, at university. I used to, we used to love it. You go out on the night out, especially Midsummer's Day, which would be about the 21st of June, and we would drink all night and wait for the sunrise, which would be just after 2 a.m. What? I mean, that was amazing. Yeah, just after 2 a.m. You could see the sunrise.
Yo, that is such a mind shift. That's such a it's a paradigm shift. Yeah. I can't think of a time where I've seen the sun come up maybe before, or I don't know, 4:45 maybe. I think at a push 4:30, I think is probably the earliest I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I feel sorry for people in Scotland because, as you know, Scotland is the far north of above England, and they're nearer, obviously nearer the Arctic Circle. You know, if you look at Scandinavian countries, again, they're a bit further north, and they have pretty much, they're the land of the midnight sun. Literally, they can be up, you know, all night, you know, at midnight and still get twilight. In Scotland, very much the same thing. And in fact, Scottish farmers in the winter, they used to hate it before the clocks changed back to normal time again, because they were getting no daylight till about 10 a.m. You know, it's insane, you know. But the whole practice of daylight saving is was brought during the First World War. It was a political move for the munitions industry. They said that the factory workers needed extra daylight. They couldn't set their clocks earlier. So what they did is the government changed the clocks for them. I'm not a big fan of it, to be honest.
It's so interesting. Alex has got an interesting question here. Is it ever permanently dark in parts of northern Russia?
Yeah. Within the Arctic Circle. The clue is the Arctic Circle. The Arctic Circle is where you get that period of permanent daylight and permanent nighttime at certain times of the year. At this time of the year now, we're going back, you know, we've just gone past the 21st of the month was the beginning of what we call the equinox. The equinox is when equal day and night throughout the world. And, you know, you get 12 hours of night, 12 hours of day. And generally speaking, that's probably what most people like. Unless you're an international traveler, like your good self, jet setting everywhere, you can cherry pick where you want to be to get most daylight. And as we know, daylight is so good for you, Jeremy. It's all that vitamin D. I know you're a very outdoors guy. Here in the UK, people don't tend to come out until about May, June time because of the weather. You know, you said the weather's warm there. I mean, we're having temperatures about 12 degrees, low 60s Fahrenheit. You know, and windy as hell. You know, it's not the best place to be in that dreaded you know, the story about English weather, it's either fog or raining. And a lot of the time that feels true. I mean, it's something you get used to. But yeah, I mean, I've never been to South Africa, but I imagine, as you say, Mediterranean weather. I love the Mediterranean, Jeremy. Spent a lot of time when I could down in the south of France. I loved it. Can't beat it. And I plan to go again because we need that sun.
Yeah, in 2019, my wife and I were in the south of France and the weather was just gorgeous. Look, when I say Mediterranean, I don't mean the whole of South Africa. I mean, I live in Cape Town, which is on the coast. But I think if you go inland, then it's a little bit different. But I mean, it's just so interesting to me how vastly different the world is. You don't think about it sometimes until A, you travel there, or B, you talk to people like I'm talking to you right now. Sometimes you just completely forget how different life experiences are.
Yeah, well, and that's a good thing. I mean, we have a lot of things, like in previous shows, we said we got a lot in common, but there's things we don't share. I mean, you're very much into the outdoors hunting thing. I've never hunted. And one of the things that struck me when I went to live in America with my wife was the fact that everybody has a gun. My in-laws are all upstate people, upstate New York. And my brother-in-law, police officer, he had an armory, and the first thing he did to me when I went over to visit my new wife was take me to his armory in his basement. And he had Kalashnikovs, he had everything. And his pride of joy was his unused Kalashnikov, Chinese AK-47. He had me handle it. Let me handle it. And
what a great gun. It's a great gun, yeah. John. I've shot an AK. I love an AK. It's rough and dirty. You can drop it. You can do what you want. That thing is just such a machine. The problem with it, though, is that it's not quite as accurate as, say, an AR-15, which is very popular in the US. I've also shot an AR-15 a few times. I also thoroughly enjoy it. It's definitely more accurate. But an AK just feels, I don't know, you feel like a mafia boss when you're shooting that thing.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I get a lot of blowback from the UK. When I came back, and I was telling my family and friends about how things are in America and the gun culture. And I tried to explain to them that you need a gun when you live in the countryside. I mean, my wife's family lived upstate New York, which is in the Catskill Mountains. It's very, very, very isolated. The nearest neighbors to us were 5 miles away. And there's mountain lion, there's bear, you know, there's all sorts of critters out there, wildlife. And if you don't have a gun, Jeremy, you are taking big risks. And coming back to London, coming back to the metropolis in the UK, people couldn't get their head around that. They couldn't see why we needed guns. But I tell you what, you do need it. And the other thing is crime as well, because, the criminals there, they don't respect the law. They're going to have guns and whatever. And gun crime in the UK is still a problem. You know, the criminals get the guns and, you know, the drug dealers have the guns in London, in Birmingham, Manchester. That they've got guns, you know, and they're going to use them. And us poor folk, we're completely unarmed, Jeremy. What can we do?
John, are you allowed to, as a civilian in the UK, own a gun?
No, you have to have a license. You have to apply for a license. You have it if you're a farmer. Farmers are allowed to apply for a gun license, then get shotguns. And there are shooting clubs in the Olympics. The British shooting team is very good. They do win medals. So sports users, they can get guns. But again, it's very well kind of controlled by the government.
Yeah. I mean, like for self-defense, are you able to own a pistol and wear it on your belt?
No, there's no open carry. You have to conceal it. And not only that, you have to have a lockable case, almost like a safe, a fixture in your home where your weapon is locked up and secure and nobody can have access to it. Because as you know, burglary is a problem. Mm. Crime rate here is just going through the roof. London, if you know anything about London now, I think it's becoming the stab city of the world. It's the capital of the world for stabbing. I visit London twice a month and it's a nightmare for stabbing.
Well, John, it's obvious to me that what the UK requires is stricter knife laws.
Yeah, I mean, people can't. It's not people that kill people, it's knives that kill people, Jeremy.
Yes, they have a mind of their own.
Yeah, they do. Ban all knives.
just hold on, John. Alex, are you allowed to own firearms in Australia? Yes, Alex is saying yes. Okay, so he says that you can own a firearm in Australia. I remember, though, something about he says it's the same laws of the UK. I remember, I think it was in the 90s, though, when there was like a mass buying of guns in Australia. I might have it wrong. But here in South Africa, it's very normal to own a weapon.
Yeah, I'm obviously a boomer. I grew up when gun laws weren't so restrictive in my time. You know, as they do, there's these mass shootings that crop up that you always use that as an excuse to take the guns away from you. And you know, one of my friends, Lindsay Williams, she said herself that down in Wales they need guns because they've got things farmers have problems with foxes taking livestock, and you need a gun if you're a farmer, if you have livestock, to keep down the predators. It doesn't mean that we're all out shooting and threatening people. It never was that problem at all. When I was a kid, I never saw any problems with guns. You know, it's the woke culture, isn't it? Snowflake culture. They're afraid.
But there is something. Look, okay. I mean, I'm not suggesting that people must be trigger happy. But there is a huge amount of wisdom also that comes with owning a gun, because you are very much required to be extremely conscious, you know, of your surroundings, your environment. You have to obviously go to the shooting club to practice. And it's not a joke. You know, if somebody breaks into your home, are you prepared mentally, psychologically for what happens after you pull that trigger?
Yeah, my American wife, she worked in the prison service in the US, and she was very, very good. She was a marksman, a very skilled marksman, and she loved the guns and very responsible. And I felt very safe when I was out with her. It's amazing. It empowers women. And this is the thing. It's a great equalizer, yes. A great leveler, isn't it? It's amazing how many women. You talk to a lot of conservative women in America, and they do value having the right to own concealed weapon. In the UK, I know women, they're terrified to go out at night. A friend of mine in London, last week, she said she was out walking the streets and she felt very vulnerable because she saw two men wearing balaclavas coming towards her. I mean, again, you know, London is the knife capital of the world. And what do you do if you're a single female alone on a street? You've got nothing you can do. They give you these can things that the loud horn things that they make loud noises, you know, penetrating whistle, but that's no good, is it?
No, but you know, you've just reminded me now.
Loud noises, you know, penetrating whistle, but that's no good, is it?
No, but you know, you've just reminded me now. I interviewed Gavin DeBecker. I don't know if you know who he is. He wrote an incredible book called The Gift of Fear. He was on Joe Rogan show last year, and I think, for what it's worth, his book was in Oprah's book club for some time. But it's been a New York Times bestseller for many years. It's a really, really good book, The Gift of Fear. And he makes the argument that fear can actually be a very good tool for survival. And obviously, he's referring to violence and people in balaclavas and that sort of thing, and how your intuition becomes really, really important. Now, if you're living in a very, very safe area of the world, these are sorts of things that you don't have to worry about. But if you're living in London, for example, or even just here in South Africa, where crime is, you know, it's commonplace, having these sort of intuitive responses really do matter in the end, and they can actually really be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Again, I go back to my friend Lindsay Williams. She won't mind me telling you this, but she was attacked. She was raped as a young woman. And she finds it very vulnerable. And the mask thing was another thing she mentioned, because it's now normalized to wear masks. Again, you can't see the attacker's face. And ironically, New York, I think, I'm not sure who it was, some politician in New York said they don't want you wearing masks anymore for public safety. Isn't that ironic, Jeremy? A year or two ago, so they were telling you to wear masks, and now they're saying don't wear masks for public safety. They can't make their mind up, can they?
No. John, I just realized Alex is going to get angry. I have to quickly go to an ad break. I'll be back with you shortly.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
If you want to get educated, you come here. You don't go to university. That will turn your brain into mush. How do I know that? Because I went for 3 years. And trust me, when I came out, my brain was mush. And it's still mush. So if I were you people and you have kids, don't push them down the educational route. Tell them to learn a trade. Tell them to learn to plaster, to paint, to decorate, to garden, to do something productive with their hands. Don't rack up student debt, because the world is going to hell in a handcart, and all they'll be done is saddled with tens of thousands of pounds of debt in a crashing economy, lack of jobs, mass unemployment, and they will not thank you for that one little jot. That's my theory for the future, because if you're relying on the man to pay your wages, and I don't mean a male, I'm talking about the man in inverted commas, or the woman for any of you feminists out there that are getting offended. The person, let's call it that, they, them, he, she, it, ze, zim, ping, quasi, quarteng, whatever pronouns you want to use. Be self-sufficient, people. Be self-sufficient. That is the message of the hour.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is often laced into illicit drugs and used to make fake versions of prescription pills. You can't see it, taste it, or smell it. Suppliers mix fentanyl into their products because it's potent and cheap, and the dealer might not even know. Keep yourself and others safe by knowing the real deal on fentanyl. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
John, I was just chatting now to Alex during the ad break about eating kangaroos because he lives in Australia. Have you ever eaten a kangaroo?
No, thank you. But I've got to tell you, we're talking about shooting. go on then.
No, when I was in Sydney, I decided because I'm a tourist, I'm going to do what tourists do, and I'm going to eat a kangaroo and also an emu, because that's the best Australia has to offer in terms of like a big bird, right? An emu. Here in Africa we have ostriches, but the emu is like the small version. But I tell you what, I didn't like either of them. Kangaroo tasted awful, and so did the emu.
Yeah, I can share similar experience with you. Going back to the gun thing, I had a girlfriend whose father was an avid shooter, hunter. He liked to shoot rabbits and pigeons, wildfowl. And he took me out one day with him when we were shooting pigeons, and he bagged a really fat, juicy pigeon, and we had to take it back to his place and obviously pluck it, gut it and prepare it. And I'll tell you what, it was very rich meat, but I was crunching on those pellets. I'll tell you what, it wasn't very good for my teeth. I don't know.
I would not eat that. No. And yes, the other thing, I don't think it's good to, you know, to shoot animals for the sake of shooting animals. So if you're going to shoot an animal, you should eat it.
But yeah, I agree.
I wouldn't want to eat a rabbit or a pigeon.
No. Well, it's well known that rabbits have got no nutritional value whatsoever. In fact, one of the great mistakes made by the early pioneers in the New World was they were shooting rabbits and living on rabbits and dying, because although they're high in protein, they provide no nutritional value. So again, you've got to be careful what you eat. You know, it can be a bit of a lottery.
The idea of shooting animals sucks. I mean, I go hunting. Yes, I enjoy hunting, but I don't get joy out of killing animals. I get joy out of the whole experience. It's very spiritual in many ways. It gives me a sense of respect for the environment and, of course, the animal. And I definitely bring home those antelope to eat. So it's not something that you just do willy nilly. And I think if people are trigger happy, then they're shooting animals for the wrong reason.
Yeah, my brother-in-law in upstate New York had a car repair business, and most of his business was repairing deer kills, where drivers in their big trucks, SUVs, would hit a deer on the road. You needed a truck because when you kill the deer, you throw the deer in the back and you take it home and you gut it and you use it for food. It was a great business for him. He was always busy repairing trucks that hit deer. Waste not, want not, they say. I don't believe in killing for the sake of it. I'm not into cruelty of any kind. But we had the conversation before about mass-produced farm animals, and my eyes were opened up when I worked in a chicken packing factory when I was a student. And I'll tell you what, that was disgusting, Jeremy. Thousands and thousands of chicken. Oh, the cruelty is unbelievable.
But that's why I like having Farmer Angus on my show. He comes on every so often. I don't know if you've heard him, but He's a South African farmer, and he is a friend of mine as well, but an incredibly good farmer. He does what's called regenerative farming, and his chickens are truly free range. I've seen them. I've filmed them. They are outside. They aren't even caged in. They're just completely free, but they all hang around the same area, and they get moved every single day. That's truly free range.
Yeah, I'm all in for that. I mean, over the past 2 or 3 years, my knowledge has really grown on the issue of health and eating well. And I realize the idea that a lot of these factory farmed animals are pumped full of chemicals. They're pumped full of growth hormone and antibiotics. And that gets into the food chain, and we consume that stuff. It's as bad as the stuff. You know, processed food itself is not healthy because, again, so many additives are put in there. And we have so many people on our show. As you know, we do the Sky Dragon Slaying Show on TNT Radio every Saturday. We have such a great response when we have experts on nutrition, because the idea now is people no longer trust the medical profession. The COVID pandemic thing has been a boon, a wonderful boost to those in alternative medicine and also healthy eating. I didn't used to take as many supplements, but I avidly take food supplements now, Jeremy. Do you?
No. I'm not anti-supplements, but I try to keep things as simple as possible. So I've often spoken about, for example, I agree with you. My wife and I cut back heavily now on processed foods, on sugars, carbohydrates, and we've increased our sort of protein, saturated fat intake. But, you know, generally speaking, the fewer ingredients, the better. And generally speaking, also, I don't find that I need supplements because I do go outside enough. I gym regularly. I feel great. So my system is not telling me, you know, that it's missing something.
Yeah. People like me, though, I mean, in very much an urban area. You know, I live in an urban area in the UK. We don't have the access like you do to fresh food. We can do, but you pay a premium for it. You know, you go into the free range sections in supermarkets, you go into the Whole Food shops, you pay a far higher price for these things. And I've got to the point now where I've realized that certain things, ingredients in the food, I will avoid. And the worst ingredient of the lot for me at the moment is vegetable oil, you know, rapeseed oil, sunflower oil. Oh, that stuff is a killer. And a lot of experts, nutritionists are saying that is at the real cause of obesity. And, you know, I think the nearer you can have control over what goes in your food, the more you can manage your own health and immune system. And most people don't realize the crap that they put in the food now. It's awful.
But that's the thing, John. I mean, you're now touching on something that I am extremely passionate about. I could talk about this all day long. But for me, I always use myself as a guinea pig. You know, so I don't just preach from a pulpit. You know, I do try and walk the talk. And what I have found just from personal experience is how much better I feel mentally and physically if I just cut back on those processed ingredients and sugars and also carbohydrates to some degree. I mean, I don't eat a lot of pasta or a lot of rice. I'm not anti it. I just cut back on it, generally speaking. And, you know, I have a clarity of thought that is so much better after a few days. And how do you win battles if you are not, you know, performing at your optimum?
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky on our show. We have some great nutritionists. I said to you, one of the great nutritionists we have is Lady Carla Davis. Lady Carla Davis spent a lot of time in the US and down in Florida and down in even down in Australia. She runs the Masters of Health magazine, and she's been very helpful to us, educating us about the benefits of whole food eating and avoiding a lot of these additives. And the idea that these vegetable oils are in the processed food is shocking because it's not regulated enough, and that they change chemically under heating. And she recommended that people change to more healthy oils, alternatives such as avocado oil, coconut oil, those kind of things. And I actually did that as an experiment about a year or so ago, and I cut out all vegetable oil and I switched to eating avocado oil and coconut oil. And I see a big benefit, Jeremy. I really do. I mean, I'm 62 now, and I go to the gym 4 or 5 times a week, train hard. You know, I'm very much into one of those. I'm very active, and my energy levels have gone up and I'm leaner. Exactly. I've got a six pack, Jerry. I've got a six pack, but I feel a lot leaner. I feel better for it. You know, the muffin top waistband is gone. And I'm sure that's a big factor. Simply taking small steps to cut out all the crap from your diet is a wonderful idea.
It's very difficult because of everything that's in food. So you have to actually be quite conscious about what you consume and what's on your plate, which is why I think a good rule of thumb is to have fewer ingredients. In other words, if you're buying something that's in a box, that's generally not a good start, because you want it to be as fresh as possible and you want it to have as few additives as possible.
Yeah. I'm beginning to realize that there's a move back to, I call it a more conservative attitude towards family. And friends of mine are now, I mean, I'm not being sexist at all, but the idea of the housewife, we had this on with Lady Carla Davis speaking about the idea of the housewife is such a wonderful concept because she effectively is the family chief nutritionist and also the educator of the children. And, you know, when I was very fortunate, my mother was very great on cooking and my first wife, again, very good at cooking. And we raised our children to have whole natural foods, snacking on chopped carrots, celery, raisins, grapes, you know, chopped up apples, that kind of thing, and not give them lots of chocolate, lots of junk. And, you know, my son was born 10 weeks premature, Jeremy. He weighed about 3 pounds and he died. And we followed through on what our beliefs were. And my son now, he's 31, but he's two-time world powerlifting champion.
Wow.
And I swear on my life, Jeremy, that the foundations were, you know, in that those early years, giving good nutrition, avoiding junk food. I mean, my children grew up not craving, potato chips, not craving lots of chocolate and all this garbage and ice cream. They actually enjoyed a proper cooked meal. And, you know, it takes time, takes preparation. And there's nothing more commendable than a house parent. I mean, believe it or not, Jeremy, I took on the role of a housewife. I mean, at the time, my wife was a police officer and I was a school teacher. And her income was fairly comparable. And I was tired of teaching, wanted a break. I thought I'd take 2 years off. And she said, well, be a house parent. And it was being a trendy liberal back then, you know, very left wing school teacher. I thought, yeah, I'll do it. And I followed the rules and I did that. And I'm very proud of the fact, Jeremy, that, you know, we as parents gave our children good nutrition, not microwave food.
I'm biting my tongue, John. I'm biting my tongue from making housewife jokes about you.
I'm very proud of it. You know, I went woke early. I mean, the UK education system, Jeremy, is a nightmare. They indoctrinate through the education system years ahead of time. You know, that's when they roll out the crazy ideas, the crazy woke agenda. And I quit teaching about 10 years ago because I was sick of it. But yeah, I bought into it 15, 20 years ago. I went along with it and I thought, yeah, we're all equal. I can do the same thing a woman does. I didn't give birth. We didn't have a baby. My wife had the baby and I was, you know, tagging along. But you know what? I tried taking my young baby to the mother and toddler groups and I was not welcome. They did not want me there. I didn't fit in, Jeremy. And that's the trouble. You know, I'm not against, you know, equality, but I don't think men naturally fit into that role.
I'll come back to that in a moment, but Holly made an interesting comment. She says here that those oils that you were talking about, she says those are posh oils and that they are very expensive. And they are expensive, but what I have found, John, is that butter is probably my favorite thing to cook in. And yeah, it's very tasty and it's not nearly as expensive as some of those oils. Coconut oil. I use pretty much exclusively, or my wife and I pretty much use exclusively coconut oil and butter.
Yeah, go back to the old-fashioned lard. I grew up having lard.
Or that.
My mother.
Yeah, or that.
Yeah, that's very cheap.
And it's very tasty as well. You know, do you remember the 80s where the whole low-fat fad came out and everything was disgusting, from low-fat yogurt to low-fat milk, which you still get. But they had, I think, I don't know if it was called the same thing where you are, but we had something called skim milk, which was essentially which was basically like water. It was terrible.
Oh man, awful. Yeah. When I was a poor student, Jeremy, I used to get tins of dried powdered skim milk. It was disgusting. You'd have to mix it with water. And I'll tell you what, it literally was like watered down paint. It was, had no taste, and that's the trouble. Without the fat in food, you don't get the taste, and people need to realize that, and food manufacturers know this. And so what they do to supplement that lack of taste is they put in more salt and sugar. They give you low fat options. But those low fat options are probably even less healthy.
The people are laughing at the comments about lard. I'm not quite sure why, but lard is something that's very good to cook in.
Yeah, I screwed up when I was at uni. I was baking a cake for somebody, and it said add butter. I had no butter, so I used lard. So I baked a cake. I'm not the greatest cook in the world. I tell you what, though, this lard in the cake made it very heavy. And it was very filling. But look, as a poor student, you just eat it.
I will say that you don't have to do large amounts of work if you're going to cook whole food type stuff. I mean, I made pork chops last night, and it was quick, you know, 30 minutes, 35 minutes max, you know. If you just lower your amount of ingredients, you don't have to have, I mean, I remember when Jamie Oliver was big, and I tried to follow some of his recipes, and it took forever to get through his ingredient list. You'd have like 5,000 different ingredients before you can even get going.
Yeah, it's time consuming, and I can't be bothered with that. One of the things I do, and you'll laugh at this, but I'm a chocoholic. I really love my chocolate, but I realized it was so unhealthy. I mean, I was buying these so-called healthy, high-protein chocolate bars where they've got like better fiber in. I thought, you know, I'm not paying £5 for a little bar. I started doing it myself, and I buy big boxes of bran flakes, and I buy the coconut oil and protein powder, and I'd get my high quality, high coconut, high cocoa content chocolate, like, and you know, the 85, 90% cocoa mass, the healthier chocolate. And I mix it all together, and I make I call them munchies. And I eat them every day. And again, it's very filling. And it keeps me away from all those crap chocolate bars that you buy now. It's so tasty. Snickers bars, things like that. I was a nut job for Snickers bars. Excuse the pun.
Do you get Lindt chocolate on your side?
Yeah, love it. Love it. Great chocolate.
Now, have you ever tried the Lindt 90% or 95%? I mean, that's very low in sugar. So if you want to have chocolate, you just have to have one or two blocks of that, and you know you're done for the evening.
Spot on, yeah. But it's so bitter, isn't it? It's very bitter. It's a quiet taste. I had the same problem when I cut back on the sugars in my coffee. I used to have 4 spoons of sugar in my coffee, Jeremy.
Oh, my word.
Insane, wasn't it? Insane. And I went cold turkey. I said, no, this is so unhealthy. I went to zero. I went from 4 to 0, and I hated it for a week. But you know what? After about a week or so, I actually got to like the taste of it. And now I go out. I still have the I can't resist coffee shops. I go to Starbucks, Costa Coffee, and places like that. And I will have an Americano black with no sugar, and I enjoy it. It's weird, isn't it? It's a quiet taste, like the Guinness. Have you had a pint of Guinness there, Jeremy? That again is another acquired taste.
I'm not a huge fan of Guinness. I know that it's very popular, and I know that I'm gonna get shot down for saying this, but I don't know. I mean, Guinness, what is it? It's a stout, isn't it? It's not a lager.
It's a stout. Yeah. It's very nutritious though.
Just a
I'll tell you
very bitter.
I'll tell you a story about Guinness. My mother was Irish, first generation immigrant. She came over on the boat from Cork, and she arrived in London with only a suitcase, and had a hard life and poor nutrition. She lost all her teeth at the age of 15, and she got pregnant quite, you know, in the late teens, early 20s with me. Went to the doctor. Doctor said, you know, you really are suffering from malnutrition. And back then there weren't supplements like they are now. So what he recommended she do is she go to the off license and buy a bottle of stout. So you buy a bottle of stout every night, which is Guinness, mix it with warm milk and sugar. And lo and behold, I mean, the things you do for healthy for children, you know, it's, I never forgot that story. And my mother, again, after a while, she just got used to it. But yeah, you do. And nowadays, with the cost of living the way it is, Jeremy, people can't afford healthy food, they say. They can't. And it's a crisis. You know, people are rioting in Paris, aren't they? Rioting everywhere. The Dutch farmers, they've had enough. Yeah, what do you do?
I think that's a cop-out, yep. John. When people say to eat healthy is more expensive, I don't think that's true, because you have to also factor in the hospital and medical costs of eating unhealthy.
True. And that's the good point. I'm a great believer in prevention rather than cure. Again, I practice what I preach in terms of nutrition, Jeremy. I do try. I eat avocados every day. I eat an apple every day. I eat a high protein diet. I avoid the carbs. I very rarely eat potato chips. I very rarely chow down on pastas or lots of potatoes, even though I'm Irish, second generation Irish. We grew up on potatoes, the spud crunches. I cut back on all that, and I feel better for it. And again, it's all about self-directed learning. You've got to find what suits you. I can't give up some things. I won't give up chocolate, as I said. I have a lot of chocolate. I have at least a bar of chocolate every day, but I have it with lots of fiber. I do it myself. And again, you've got to dovetail things to what works for you and what's quick and efficient. Like you, I'm not a great believer in, I can't spend hours and hours and hours over the stove. I can't do that. And my son, again, I'll go back to my son. He was a two-time world powerlifting champion. What he does batch cooking. Him and his wife, they spend the weekend doing batch cooking, and they cook some amazing meals during the weekend, and they freeze them, and they have them each day during the week. And it's very cost-effective. And again, you come home from work or whatever you're doing in your busy life, and it's easy. You know, you just warm it up in the pan, and, you know, you've got nutritious food, home-cooked food, rather than going out to restaurants. And the big thing in the UK at the moment, Jeremy, is deliveries. Everybody now is having home delivered fast food. It's gone crazy. I went to, have you got Five Guys where you are? Five Guys chain. It's a big chain, kind of the upmarket version of McDonald's. Where I live, they opened up a new branch. Five Guys is like the healthy option, you know, if you want to eat a McDonald's burger. And what they use is they use peanut oil rather than regular vegetable oil. And they have in the middle of the store, it's a great marketing trick, they have these bags of potatoes, and you can actually see the raw ingredients, and they cook it in front of you. So again, it's not a perfect answer, but it's a step away from the ultra junk food. And I think anything that gets you moving you in the right direction is not such a bad thing. And I'm all for that.
I'm all for moving into the far right direction, John. Just hang on a second. Hold on, John. I must just quickly do my last ad break. Yep. I'll be back with you now.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Any of you people fans of Steely Dan? I wasn't a real big fan of Steely Dan, but they had a song called Reeling in the Years, and there was a line in it that said, "What passes for knowledge these days, I can't understand." So they're doing this review down in Texas on the whole winter storm situation they had there a couple years ago, which, by the way, weatherbell.com called 10 days in advance. We had clients down there. They bought out all the generators 5-6 days in advance so that their employees were ready. But anyway, someone asked, from a climate perspective, how likely do you think we have another big outbreak like this? The short answer is it is likely, said one of the panelists, because of stratospheric warming being caused by climate change. Well, if it is being caused by climate change, that is a reaction. When the stratosphere warms, the troposphere cools underneath. So if the climate is changing back, there would naturally be more stratospheric warming. That's the first thing he doesn't know anything about. The second thing is not more stratospheric warming going on. Stratospheric warming has been going on since we were taking balloon measurements. And at Weatherbell, we showed people, for instance, why in the United States, March and April would average out colder than January and February against the averages, because of the big stratospheric warming event that went off in February. So this is the kind of stuff that is going on. Now, I could keep talking about this, but I went way, way, way beyond my minute. And I don't sound as good as Mark Morano. So that's it for now. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
When you remember this year's holiday, Will you think of the waves gently lapping on the shore? The sun setting over rolling hills? Or sat, bored out of your mind with a flat tire, waiting for a recovery truck? One in five motorway breakdowns are caused by tire problems. Before you set off, check your tire pressure. Highways England.
Germ warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Tell me about your new book, John.
Yeah, thank you. I've been itching to tell you about this, Jeremy. It's been a great week for me. We just released our new book, and we've been doing Sky Dragon Slaying books for the last 12 or 13 years. We originally wrote about climate, and I work with a team of people at Principia Scientific. We have 5,000 or 6,000 people internationally, Jeremy, that work in the sciences, STEM specialists. And about 2 years ago, we thought, well, you know what? The issue now isn't so much about the climate. The issue is about the fake pandemic. And some of our senior scientists, among them Dr. Judy Wileyman and Dr. Saeed Qureshi, they work in this field, Jeremy. They are experts in this field. And they said, look, we need to get together and reveal the truth. We're not getting any traction in the mainstream. We need to write a book. And so, yep, it took about 18 months to do it, and it's now on the market. And it's something I want to urge that you share with your listeners. If anybody's into it, it's the book is Slaying the Virus and Vaccine Dragon. And what it is, it's our examination of what really happened during the pandemic. And what we do is we expose the nonsense by the governments and Big Pharma about so-called vaccine safety. There's no such thing. We reveal there's been no safety test on any vaccines for 30 years. We also reveal the fact that the idea of germ theory is a theory. There's a competing theory called terrain theory. And believe it or not, Jeremy, terrain theory is all about prevention, not cure. Germ theory, we think, might need to be revised. We're not 100% sure it's going to have to be thrown out, but we do think some revision has to be done because the science of virology has made an enormous error. We don't think there's any such thing as a COVID-19 virus. And guess who just came out the other week to agree with us? It couldn't have been better timed. Nobody better than the former chief science officer for Pfizer, Mike Yeadon, has now come out to admit he doesn't think that there was any such thing as a COVID virus, COVID-19 yep. virus. And if there's no virus, tell me why. Go ahead.
Because he watched my podcast with Denis Rancourt from Canada, and that swung him because he made a Telegram post about it.
Yep, there you go. And I think that so many great minds, independent thinkers, are now waking up. It's been a 2 year process, Jeremy, but there's momentum now. And I think what we might be seeing is a seismic shift. It's called a paradigm shift. Scientifically speaking, a paradigm shift is when there's enough scientists and experts who have agreed that something is not right in the mainstream narrative and something has to change. And we think that time is now. The proof of the pudding was the failed vaccine rollout. And ironically, the people proving our point are unrelated professionals. People in the insurance industry are reporting high numbers of excess deaths amongst young people. Myocarditis, which was never used to be a problem amongst young people, is now becoming a fast-growing cause of adverse reactions to the vaccine, and the deaths are astronomical. We're so fortunate. Dr. Judy Wileyman is my co-author, and she's Australia's leading expert on vaccine injury. She's been doing this stuff since the mid-1990s, Jeremy, and had so much grief in her career. And I'm so glad to say that she's now getting her time. Her moment in the spotlight is coming. And all those years of fighting against this big pharma narrative that the thing is not to go for costly treatments. As you know, Big Pharma, they make huge profits from these vaccines, £1,000, some of them. When all you need to do really is focus on existing treatments, such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which were very, very effective at reducing the reactions to any kind of illness. And like Mike Yeadon says, he thinks, like I do, and like my co-authors, we think COVID-19 merely was the influenza rebranded. And we stick to that. And unfortunately, a lot of people are now seeing it our way. And time is on our side, Jeremy. And the longer it goes on, the more we're realizing that these politicians are now admitting. They're admitting they got on the bandwagon and they made a mistake.
Are you going to send me a copy of your book?
Oh, go on then. I'll tell you what, I'll send you a copy of the book if you do a promotion on your wonderful podcast.
Yes.
Oh, deal. Done deal.
There we go. Because I think that this is the kind of knowledge that needs to be shared. And I agree with everything you're saying. I mean, I remember, I think it was December 2020, I watched a documentary that had just come out. It was the first documentary about the whole COVID thing. It was called The New Normal. I don't know if it's still available. It was very quickly taken down off YouTube, etc., and it was very difficult to find. And already then, it was making the arguments about whether or not SARS even exists. And I remember my wife walked down the stairs, and I asked her, "What if this thing isn't even real?" You know, and we had a conversation about it. You know, and I think now, I mean, at that point, you couldn't even ask the question to anybody because they just called you bonkers. It's great now that you can openly state it.
Yeah, and I got to also add that somebody else who's now come over to our side, apart from Dr. Michael Yeadon, is a well-known Australian. We've been very, as I said, Dr. Judy Wileyman came over. We've got Dr. David Steele. We've got Dr. Altman. Dr. Altman was 40 years in the management and designing of drug testing and so forth, clinical trials. He was adamant, you know, a few years ago that the vaccines were a great thing. He's woken up to it. Another great, one of my heroes, going back to my childhood, to tell you how old this guy is, Dr. Vernon Coleman. He's Britain's best-selling medical doctor, publisher. He's been saying for the past 2 or 3 years, this is genocide, Jeremy. It's literally genocide, because the pharmaceutical companies, they know that these vaccines are going to cause more harm than good.
I see we are running out of time, so maybe let's just quickly promo your show.
Yeah, we do the Sky Dragon Slaying Show on TNT Radio. It's well, the clock's going forward. It's going to change times. At the moment, it's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. New York time. As of the following next week, it's going to be 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on a Saturday evening. It's midnight to 2 a.m. in the UK, and it's hard work for me, Jeremy. But this weekend, we've got a wonderful show. We've got we're talking about climate again, and we've got a wonderful guest, Professor Arthur Vitoretto, who's talking about geothermal energy and how that is an unquantified form of climate change, climate driver. And that's something I'm looking forward to.
I had a conversation a few weeks ago with Matt Errett, and he made an interesting comment, because it was just after that that whole story that happened in Turkey. And it got me thinking about a hypothesis, and I don't know if it's latched on to anywhere, even in the mainstream yet, but that earthquakes are not necessarily a result of tectonic shifts, but a result of the sun mixed with the ionosphere.
Yeah, one of my favorite heroes in the science.
Electromagnetism,
Henrik Svensmark is, he actually had his theory tested at the CERN collider. And he was vindicated. Cosmic rays affect the amount of cloud in our atmosphere. This is something not factored in by the UN IPCC. Again, the people who run the UN climate alarmism thing, they just want to focus on CO2. Carbon dioxide, Jeremy, is actually plant food. It's so cynical. We are basically carbon-based life forms. Carbon dioxide is so essential, and yet they want to cut it back. It's insane, Jeremy, and we think it's all cynical. Population control and taxation, that's all it's about, really, and we hate it.
Okay, I see we are almost out of time, so let me just quickly thank you, John O'Sullivan, for joining me in the trenches. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to you joining me in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks, Jeremy. Look forward to it.
And Holly, to answer your question, Vernon Coleman was on my show end of last year. Just go and have a look on TNT's website and in the archives, and you'll find it there. Who's this? Ben Davidson. I'll look him up. Thank you to Zen Farmer for that suggestion. Coming up next is George Eliason. So don't go anywhere. I have thoroughly enjoyed my week with you on my new time slot. I will obviously be in the same time slot next week. Thank you to Alex for making me sound absolutely awful. If you want to send me an email, you can do that at jimwarfare@tntradio.live. I will catch you on Monday. I've got some great guests coming up next week. You're not going to want to miss that. All right. I think I'm going to go enjoy my weekend. My name is Jim. This is Jim Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.